Father, thank you for Tim's spiritual stature. And I pray that this morning you will speak to us through him. Will you enable him to communicate your thoughts, the essence of what you want us to hear this morning, clearly? You help us to open our spiritual ears and enable those words to drop through onto fertile ground, please. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Don't go just yet, Tim. Before I start, I will introduce myself in a moment for those of you who don't know me, but I just actually wanted to say some thank yous. For those of you who don't know, just a little bit of background. When I came to River, I was in this congregation for 11 months, October 2004 till September 2005. And Tim and Chris were two of the really important people for me, who walked through me with that year. I was doing a discipleship year. Tim was supporting me as my discipler, and Chris would cook a lovely meal and give her husband up for an evening a week. And I just really appreciate you guys, and thank you so much.
You're welcome.
So thank you for praying for me. And there are some other thank yous I want to say as well, but I'll probably get onto them later. So for those of you who don't know me, For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tim Stone, or Tiny Tim, as I've been referred to on the board. Someone's got obviously good sense of humour. I am part of the Maidenhead congregation. I've been part of River since October 2004. And I work as Kristen's PA. And so that means I've got my finger on the pulse, hopefully, of what's going on in church and stuff. And it's just such a privilege to be here today with you guys. Like I said, Marlow was the place that welcomed me into River Church. And some of the people that were really key in that were Roger and Evelyn, who were the first people who said hello to me on my first Sunday here in Marlow congregation. And then I spent the rest of the year, every Wednesday, sitting with Roger in a corner, playing with puzzles at a toddler group that was run called River Life that probably most of you know about. And Roger, I just want to say, actually, you're a bit of a hero to me in some ways. The way you live your life focused on the Lord, the way you've walked through so many difficult circumstances is amazing. Absolutely amazing. Excuse me. Okay, so I'm 25. I've kind of introduced myself a bit. I always like to share a little bit of a story about me so that you know that I don't think I've got everything sorted, or that I don't think I have everything kind of wound up. So I like to share kind of a story that's kind of slightly detrimental to my self-image. The story I want to share this morning is about my first job interview. I was 16. I had an uncle who worked at the post office, who kindly got me a job interview to do some sorting of mail in the evenings, and he got me this interview, and I filled all the forms out and stuff, and there was a group interview, and we did some tests, and then we had the kind of one-on-one interview, and the guy said, "I just want to point this out on your form. When you put your name for title, you've put MS," and I was like, "Yeah, well I'm not 18, so MS stands for master, doesn't it?" And he went, "No, actually it stands for Ms, and that means that you don't want to be identified as married or unmarried as a woman." And at that moment, it dawned on me that on every form I'd ever written, including my bank account, when I'd opened that up, I'd referred to myself as Ms, Timothy Peter Stone. So, really, no, I don't have everything sorted when I'm up here, but God has worked in my life. And the only qualification I have is that Jesus has chosen me, like he's chosen each of you, and like he wants to choose everyone out there. And so I want to share some things with you this morning. And the title of my preach is Abandoned? And it's about responding to God's presence in worship. Now, you might think it's a little bit strange for me to be preaching on worship, seeing as I'm not a worship leader. I'm not. But I do love worshipping the Lord. And I want all of us to be really free to worship the Lord in whatever way is appropriate to us. And I'm going to speak from 2 Samuel 6 this morning. So if you want to find 2 Samuel 6 in your Bible. So I've got a couple of questions to ask you before the preach. Who wants more of God's presence personally? Oh, that's good. That's a better response than I got in Maidenhead. Not to be competitive, just to encourage you. I had to ask that question twice. I had to bully people into giving the right answer to that one. And who wants more of God's presence in our meetings?
Yeah.
That's good. Good. Yeah. Excellent. Well, that's good. So now you... So anyway, if you put your hand up, you really do need to listen. If you didn't, you still need to listen. If you sing songs like Undignified by Matt Redman and Over the Mountains and the Sea by Delirious, and you struggle with the bits... Like when it gets to saying, and I'll become even more undignified than this. And you stood there singing, and I'll become even more undignified than this. Not looking very undignified at all. Okay? That's a good prophetic kind of statement, but I always get uncomfortable in that song because generally I don't look very undignified when I'm singing it. And the more, well, yeah, I could become more undignified, but actually I kind of sing, I'll become even more undignified than this. And then I move on to the next bit of the song, which I feel I can sing. Or Over the Mountains and the Sea, where you go, oh, I can sing of your love forever. And then there's this little bit, which I hate in the song, because it always challenges me. And they will dance with joy like we're dancing now. And I look around, and if we're lucky, there are two people dancing, and I might be tapping my foot, which is kind of about as close as I get. If those kind of things make you uncomfortable, then today's preach is for you. So we're going to look at how our personal response to God's presence so we're going to look at our personal responses. We're also going to look at how we respond to others when they're responding to God's presence. So I'm just going to read 2 Samuel 6. I'm going to read the whole chapter, and then we're going to go through it bit by bit. And I've got far too much Bible clutter, and it's all starting to fall out. Okay. David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. David and all the people with him set out and went from Baal Judah to bring up the Ark of God, which is called by the name of the Lord of Hosts, who is enthroned on the cherubim. They carried the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went in front of the Ark. David and all the house of Israel were dancing before the Lord with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out his hand to the Ark of God and took hold of it, for the oxen shook it. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him there because he reached out his hand to the Ark, and he died there beside the Ark of God. David was angry because the Lord had burst forth with an outburst against Uzzah. So that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. That means breaking forth against Uzzah. David was afraid of the Lord, and he said, "How can the Ark of the Lord come into my care?" So David was unwilling to take the Ark of the Lord into his care in the city of David. Instead, David took it to the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. Unfortunate name. The Ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite, for 3 months, and the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. It was told King David, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the Ark of God." So David went and brought up the Ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the Ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling. David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the Ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. As the Ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. They brought the Ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and offerings of well-being before the Lord. When David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the offerings of well-being, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of Hosts and distributed food among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, to each a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins. Then all the people went back to their homes. David returned to bless his household, but Michal, the daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel honored himself today, uncovering himself before the eyes of his servants' maids, as any vulgar fellow might shamelessly uncover himself." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me in place of your father and all his household to appoint me as prince over Israel, the people of the Lord, that I have danced before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this, and I will be abased in my own eyes. But by the maids of whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honor." And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child until the day of her death. Well, there's a few challenging things in that passage, isn't there? Couple of people die, one person dies, lots of animals die, one person doesn't bear children, a wife doesn't bear a child till before she dies. So it's a pretty serious, heavy-duty passage. Well, before we delve into it, I'm going to have a drink, but I'm also going to give you some background. Now, when it talks about the Ark of the Lord is kind of the symbol and the sign of God's presence with his people. And also is a symbol of his power. And they used to take it before them when they went into battle. They always used to take it with them in those days. You know, this is really important because if we're looking for God's presence and power, when it's talking about the Ark and how they treated it, there's probably some crossover. It was built in the time of Moses, and the Israelites literally took it everywhere with them. But just before we get to this point in David's story, it had been captured at the end of Saul's reign by the Philistines. Saul, who was king before David, had taken it into battle, but had lost the battle due to trusting in himself and not in God. While the Philistines had it, they put it in the temple of their god Dagon, who was made of stone. And they put the ark in there, and then they left. And when they came back, Dagon had fallen over on his face before the ark. And this happened a number of times until he actually the stone that they worshipped broke up. And the Philistines were a bit scared by this, and some of them started to get sick. And they blame this on the ark, and so they sent it back to the Israelites. And this is kind of the point where we join the story. Okay, so let's start at the beginning of the passage. 2 Samuel 6:1-8. And this section is respecting the presence. I'm just going to read through it again. I'll do this with each bit of the passage. David again gathered all the chosen men of Israel, 30,000. David and all the people with him set out and went from Baal Judah to bring up from there the Ark of the Lord, which is called by the name of the Lord of Hosts, who is enthroned on the cherubim. They carried the Ark of God on a new cart and brought it out of the house of Abinadab, which was on the hill. Uzzah and Ahio, the sons of Abinadab, were driving the new cart with the Ark of God, and Ahio went in front of the Ark. David and all the house of Israel were dancing before the Lord with all their might, with songs and lyres and harps and tambourines and castanets and cymbals. When they came to the threshing floor of Nacon, Uzzah reached out his hand to the Ark of God, took hold of it, for the oxen had shaken it. The anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and God struck him there because he had reached out his hand to the ark, and he died there beside the ark of God. David was angry because the Lord had burst forth with an outburst upon Uzzah. So that place is called Perez Uzzah to this day. Now, I don't know exactly why this happens, why Uzzah dies. Because you think, okay, the Israelites have put it on the Ark of God on a brand new cart. They've put it in their brand new BMW, so to speak, and they're bringing it up. But that wasn't how God had told them to treat the Ark. God had told them to treat the Ark by carrying it on the shoulders of the priests and sacrificing on their way up, which we hear about later in the story. It does seem a little harsh, I think, on Uzzah, who only wanted to stop the Ark falling off of the cart. I don't totally have an answer for this, but it's really important that we value God's presence, that we respect it by doing things that we know honour him. And doing things we know honour him, is part of that is obedience. And the Israelites hadn't been obedient. They were worshipping, they were praising, they were dancing around. And I'm sure it was a great party, but actually they weren't doing it in obedience. God is a big, mighty, powerful God. And when you are in his presence, it's important to be respectful. When you're in the presence of royalty, you respect their authority by following certain customs. Bowing, curtsying, calling them by their royal highness. If you don't, you're deemed to be disrespectful and you get removed from the presence. If it's like that with earthly kings and queens, how much more so with God? We need to be respectful of God's presence, and we need to be careful how we handle it and how we step into it and how we honour him. Okay, next section. 2 Samuel 6, 9 to 12a. So it's the first half of 12. David was afraid of the Lord that day. He said, "How can the ark of the Lord come into my care?" So David was unwilling to take the ark of the Lord into his care in the city of David. Instead, David took it to the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite. The ark of the Lord remained in the house of Obed-Edom the Gittite for 3 months. And the Lord blessed Obed-Edom and all his household. Now it was told King David, "The Lord has blessed the household of Obed-Edom and all that belongs to him because of the ark of God." So when I'm talking about the ark, when I read out the ark, I want you to be thinking presence and power, really, because that's what it symbolizes. God is a good and generous God. Being in his presence is a great place to be. Obed-Edom found this out. He's so generous that when we're with him, he can't help but bless us and give us things. How many of you know, even if you come into church and you're not really in that place where you're really, really, really wanting to meet with God, how often do you leave encouraged or with a smile on your face? How often do you come in, even when you are in that place of wanting really to push into God, and let's have a show of hands. How many people know that being in God's presence is a good place to be? How do you leave built up? Do you leave feeling better? Do you leave feeling warm and light? But that's what Obed-Edom experienced. And do you know what? God sometimes gives us gifts. Now, in my room at the Green Slades, who I lodge with, is a carrier bag with a box of Cadbury's Heroes and a box of the chocolate seashells. And I was supposed to bring them here today and give them out as gifts. Thankfully, our Father is more reliable than I am. Okay, so what kind of gifts do we get? Encouraged. We receive love. We receive affirmation. In the midst of being challenged about things, we still receive that love and affirmation. Sometimes they're gifts of healing. Sometimes gifts of words. Sometimes gifts of friendship. Being in God's presence is a good place to be. And so when David hears about this, well, let's see what he does. The second half of verse 12 to verse 17. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom to the city of David with rejoicing. And when those who bore the ark of the Lord had gone 6 paces, he sacrificed an ox and a fatling. David danced before the Lord with all his might. David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting and with the sound of the trumpet. As the ark of the Lord came into the city of David, Michal, daughter of Saul, looked out of the window and saw King David leaping and dancing before the Lord, and she despised him in her heart. They brought the ark of the Lord and set it in its place inside the tent that David had pitched for it. And David offered burnt offerings and offerings of well-being before the Lord. How do we respond to God's presence? David was so happy that the ark, he was carrying God's presence into the city of Jerusalem, he couldn't contain himself. He danced with all his might. He danced around in a linen ephod. What's a linen ephod, I hear you ask?
What's a linen ephod?
Good. See, that's another preacher. So, you know, it's a preacher's trick, so you'll get there eventually. What's a linen ephod? A linen ephod, as we kind of hear later when David's wife, Michal, confronts him, she says, "You've been dancing around in your undergarments." He's so excited and happy that he throws off all the clothes, the kingly robes, that are heavy but stately and regal, he throws them off so that he is free to dance around before the Lord. Now, the picture, okay, is of someone dancing around in their underpants. Okay? So that's a bit like, okay, that's a bit like me. There's a no, there was a slight no. That's enough to stop me. They are clean on, so that's good. When I did this preach in Maidenhead, I literally went for my belt and someone went, no! Which was good because I didn't want to have to remove anything. So, okay, so me dancing around in my underpants, that is a stupid picture, yes? And slightly disturbing for many of you, I'm sure. But, okay, I am not a king. Okay, I might be a prince in God's household, but in an earthly sense, I am not a king. So what's the equivalent picture? The equivalent picture, please forgive me, Queen, is of the Queen dancing up Windsor High Street in her nightie. That is the equivalent picture. It's funny. It's funny. It's ridiculous. But that is how ridiculous this is. He was so happy to be in God's presence that he was willing to, he couldn't contain himself. He was willing to look totally ridiculous. Do you know, I don't think this would have been a problem for his wife had he been a good dancer. Men, husbands, boyfriends, I speak to you now. Women, please forgive me. I am not a particularly good dancer. Lizzie will testify to that fact. My dancing, I do have developed my own style, which I call life dance. And because I'm not particularly inspired, I take my inspiration from things of life. So, Peter Crouch, the robot. No, much, much more simple than that. One of Lizzie's most embarrassing ones is the jackhammer. So I take something. Do you want me to do it?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. There we go. Well, I'm going to get in trouble for this. Okay, so the jackhammer, okay, imagine me on the dance floor. Which doesn't happen very often, you'll be glad to know. Okay, so this is a jackhammer. Okay, and the only way I can dance is by taking the mickey out of it because I'm not a very gifted dancer. I won't do the rodeo. You know the bulls that you ride? I won't do that one. No, I won't do it. After the preach, I might. Sorry, dear. Okay, this is the rodeo, okay? You'll all be doing it. Okay, but it's such a stupid picture. This guy who's a king, willing to dance around in his underpants in front of people because he is so excited that he is in the Lord's presence. Do we know what we've got? And I'm not saying that to condemn you this morning. I'm not saying, ooh, you should know. I'm saying, let's think about it. Let's enjoy it and value it for what it is. Okay? Now, when it comes to dancing, being free, I find it difficult in church. This preach isn't about dance, but dance is really important. Dance exposes us in a way that very little else does. Singing does for some people. I remember when I started to really kind of follow the Lord and go to church, I wanted to worship, but I didn't have a particularly good voice. So I determined that while I couldn't sing very well, I was going to sing as loud as I possibly could, which probably wasn't a blessing for other people. Something's happened in me, though. Like, I sing much better now that I made that choice to use what I had, the little that I had. And it's developed, and I don't know if that's just that I've been able to use my vocal cords better, or God's blessed me with a better voice because I've used what I've had. Do something new in worship. I'm not saying be wild to be wild. But don't get stuck in a pattern that there's no freedom in. Don't get stuck in just singing. Singing is fantastic and it's a great gift and we should enjoy it. But don't get stuck in that place. I'm going to come on to dance a little bit later. Lost my place in my notes now. Now, let's stay in that place. Let's stay in that place. Dance is a really powerful thing. I don't know, I'm fine getting up in front of people and talking. It's never really been a problem for me. But for some of you, that would be a really exposing thing. So do it. Last big gathering for me, I preached on this a few weeks ago, and it didn't get recorded in Maidenhead, and I wanted to listen to it again because I wanted to challenge myself. I wanted to live up to the words that I'm sharing. And so I went to big gathering with the intention of dancing. And I did a little bit, but I'm on a journey with it. It was a little bit, but it's a step on that journey. I don't expect things to radically change for you. They might, but I don't necessarily expect things to radically change for you. Just start out on that journey, finding out what it's really about to worship the Lord in freedom. Some of you, that will be sharing a scripture from the front for the first time. Some of you, that will be, might be enjoying someone else's worship and thanking them for it. Paul, loved watching you worship this morning. You're free in that. And it's a place that I'm not quite at yet, but I just honour that because it's a place I'd love to be. So bless you. If you find dancing difficult because you feel exposed, try it. If you find sharing stuff from the front because you feel exposed, try it. If you find it difficult to say, oh, do you know what? I'd really love to be as free as you in the worship. Honour that person by saying it to them. Do you know what? If you want to try dancing, it doesn't have to be in church. If you're doing it for the Lord, you can do it anywhere. And I'm not talking about the street. I'm really talking about your bedroom. Okay? That is where I dance before the Lord. There are reasons for that. One is my pride. One is that I'm quite long and gangly and my limbs flailing about in church is likely to cause an accident. I don't want to dislodge eyes. I don't want to break people's teeth. So, but it's difficult to go somewhere in public that you haven't been in private. So don't expect to before you've done it before the Lord in the private place. I bet David did that all the time. I've got no evidence for that, but I expect that he did. It's difficult to go somewhere in public that you haven't been in private. And that's a key for lots of different things, but particularly for this in worship. When we're worshipping in his presence, we need to be able to go with it. We need to be working towards a point where we can abandon ourselves in it. Because we want to give all of ourselves to the one who gave all of himself. Yeah? Makes sense? So I am working towards it. Hear me? I'm a long way from it, but I'm working towards it. David abandoned himself in God's presence, and he did not care what he looked like, only that he was in God's presence and giving all of himself to God. And this is before Jesus. He knew God's faithfulness and love and fatherhood and power, but it was before Jesus, and he was still doing it. I looked at some of the words in that bit of the passage and looked at what they kind of meant in Hebrew. And the word dance, it is literally dance, but it kind of carries a connotation of to whirl around. What a fantastic picture. What a rich descriptive word. And to give all of himself, he gave him his whole self, all of his might. That is absolutely everything. That word means absolutely anything. All, any, or every. All together. Enough. Whole. It is all. That means absolutely everything. And might, and this is my favourite one. Might kind of breaks down into four bits in the Hebrew word, breaks into four bits. Force, security, he gave all of his security. Praise, but my favourite one is majesty. He danced with all of his kingly majesty. He gave all of that majesty away to dance. Fantastic. Okay, verse 18 and 19. When David had finished offering the burnt offerings and the offerings of well-being, he blessed the people in the name of the Lord of hosts and distributed food among all the people, the whole multitude of Israel, both men and women, to each a cake of bread, a portion of meat, and a cake of raisins. Then all the people went back to their homes. When we've been engaged with God's presence, we get blessed. Obed-Edom found it. David found it. So what does David do with it? Does he go home and say, oh, what a nice meeting? Does he go, does he just suck it all up for himself? No. Everything that he's been given, personally, he's received lots. And he goes off and he blesses the whole nation. Everyone that was there with him, he blesses. And we're told that's, at the beginning of the passage, we're told that's 30,000 men. It was not cheap for him. But because he had been so blessed, he could not help but bless the people with him. Do you know when we come into God's presence or into a meeting, it might be that that we get encouraged, our spirits lifted, a sense of peace, we might get healed, we might get an answer to prayer. We might see someone else meeting God in a fresh way, and that might be enough to be our blessing. Whatever it is that we get blessed with when we come into contact with God's goodness, we need to be prepared to give it away. Yes, enjoy it. Yes, it is for you. But we love because he first loved us. What we get is for us, but it's to be given. We need to share that blessing. It is never just for us. If we simply consume what God has given us, it stops. You share it, it continues. They share it, it continues. They share it, it continues. Now there's a film with Haley Joel Osment and Kevin Spacey, and I can't remember what it's called. Pay It Forward. Perfect example. Okay? It's a lovely film. But that's it. He decides that he's going to bless someone, but the condition of that blessing is that they then bless someone. And it multiplies and builds and builds and builds. Watch it, it's a great film. That's how we're going to get God's goodness into the whole earth. Not by consuming, but by sharing. The Lord wants his glory and his goodness to be known across the face of the whole earth. But if we just eat it and rest on it, yes, enjoy it, but if we just enjoy it and keep it to ourselves, A, we don't know the fullness of the blessing that he's given us, because we've not shared it, and B, we won't do the job that God's called us to do. Lord's prayers, your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as in heaven. We're supposed to be a bit of heaven on earth. That means sharing the good things that God's given us with others. How are they going to encounter it if we don't share it? Okay, verse 20 to 23, exposing the spirit of pride. David returned to bless his household, but Michal, daughter of Saul, came out to meet David and said, "How the king of Israel has honoured himself today, uncovering himself before the eyes of his servants' maids, as any vulgar fellow might shamelessly uncover himself." David said to Michal, "It was before the Lord who chose me in place of your father and all his household to appoint me as prince over Israel, the people of the Lord, that I have danced before the Lord. I will make myself yet more contemptible than this, and I will be abased in my own eyes. But by the maids of whom you have spoken, by them I shall be held in honour." And Michal, the daughter of Saul, had no child until the day of her death. Our reaction to seeing others abandoned in God's presence tells us a lot about where we're at personally. Do we think, oh, you can't dance, you shouldn't be doing that? Which would not be an unfair thought if you thought that about me. I wouldn't be offended by that. But if that's your first thought, you've got to ask yourself something. Do we think they're embarrassing themselves? If that's your first thought, you've got to ask yourself something. If we're offended by someone else abandoning themselves before the Lord, like Michal was, we've got to ask ourselves something. Or are we blessed by the fact that they're able to abandon themselves and be free? Do we think it's great that they're really going for it? Does it inspire us? I would suggest to you that that is the appropriate reaction, the reaction that God would like us to have, but I also know that I don't always have that reaction. So if you're offended by something that someone else is doing for the Lord, don't condemn yourself. Use it as something to make you think about where you're at. Take it to the Lord. Say, Lord, actually I don't like this, the fact that this is my first reaction. I want to be enjoying what you're doing and what other people are doing for you. I want to be built up by it. I don't want to squash it. I want to see them built up and I want to be built up. Just use it as a reason to take it to the Lord. Michal told her husband off because she was embarrassed by what he'd done. If he was a good dancer, like I was saying earlier, she would not have been embarrassed, I don't think. Although, even if I was a good dancer, I still don't think you'd be that blessed by seeing me in my underpants. He'd look foolish because of his worship and abandon. In 1 Peter 5, it says, God opposes the proud but gives grace to the humble. Michal's pride excludes her from the blessing of God. Excludes her from receiving all the things that... Because David returns to bless his household, it says at the beginning. He comes back with the intent of blessing his household, like he has just blessed the nation. She excludes herself from that blessing with her reaction. It also stops her being able to carry a child and give birth. Now, this is a pretty serious consequence. This is a heavy-duty passage, like I was saying earlier. That's a serious consequence. Now, I don't know exactly what that means. I don't know if it was a supernatural act. I think more likely is that David probably refused to consummate the marriage that God was no longer at the centre of, because he was totally abandoned to God himself. I don't know. That's my speculation. You know, we need to check our reactions to those who are abandoning themselves in God's presence. If it offends us, we need to ask why. If it embarrasses us, we need to ask why. If we're unable for pride to join in or see God's blessing, we need to ask why. Just use those things to prompt you into your relationship with God. We all start from somewhere. God loved us while we were still in sin, it says in Romans. God doesn't worry too much about that stuff, but when we find ourselves in difficulty or with reactions that we don't think are quite appropriate, we should take that as a prompt to go to the Lord, to step into that relationship, to ask him about it, to ask his help. I'm just going to conclude, and then I think we're doing communion. Just before we go into communion, I just want to do one or two things, just have some space for reflection. I don't know if we're having any more worship, but I really want you to hear me correctly. I'm not telling you to dance or to look foolish for the sake of it. I'm just encouraging you to look at where you're at. To look at how free and able you are to abandon yourself in worship. And how free and able you are to let others abandon themselves in worship. That's the point of this. It's not telling you particularly to do anything. It's just, where are we going with this? Am I stuck in that place? Oh, yes, I am. Well, Lord, help me out of it. I'm going to put a worship CD on this afternoon and I'm going to spend 5 minutes jumping around my bedroom like a lunatic or something like that. Let's just get started with it. Dance is not the only response to God's presence, but it is an important one because of the way it exposes us. But there are other things that expose us too. Our ability to abandon ourselves or to give ourselves in God's presence is important. God wants us more than we want him. He loves receiving from us and joining with us more than we know. But we've got to give ourselves into that. The more we want of him and are able to give of ourselves, the more we'll be able to access him. Those questions at the beginning, who personally wants more of God's presence? Who wants more of God's presence in their meeting? This is important for that. The more blessing and freedom we live in, the more we're able to give God's blessing away and change the world. I've kind of been talking about us a lot today. But we are here for a very specific and important reason. Because we want to live God's way. We want to impact God's world with God's love. God doesn't just send us out by ourselves to do that. Thankfully, we have things like church, we have meetings, we can come into his presence, he gives to us, he lifts us up, he encourages us, he strengthens us, he equips us. And yes, that is because he loves you as an individual and he cares about you as an individual. But he also cares about all the other individuals. And we have a responsibility to share what we've got. Okay, our response. Let's just take a little bit of time quiet before communion. And I'm just going to ask a few questions. And I just want you to think about them. I'm not going to do a corporate response. I expect there's a prayer ministry team. If there's particular things that have stood out to you in today's talk that you want to act on, then find someone you know or go and stand with someone in the prayer ministry team. Get them to pray for you. Just declare that you want to be freer in worship. You want to access more of the Lord's presence. You want to be better at sharing, whatever it is. Just encourage you to do that with someone. Okay. Well, these are the questions. Just want to kind of, you might want to close your eyes, you might want to bow your heads, whatever helps you kind of think and reflect. First question. Where are we at today? What is our response to God, to people abandoned in God's presence? Lord, I just want to pray for us in this place. As you're speaking, as we're thinking and reflecting. We love you, Lord. And we want to be able to show that as best we can. And Lord, I just pray for that freedom to expose ourselves before you in the private place. And I pray, Lord, that as it grows in the private place, it would move into the public place. That we would be free to worship you with all of who we are, body, soul, mind, and strength. In the public place. Whether that's today on a Sunday morning in a meeting, whether that's in Higginson Park on May the 18th. Just pray for that freedom and engagement with you to grow. And Lord, help us share what we've got. Help us share the blessings you give us. Because we want to see this world change. See your love poured out.